So next week, just to let you know, on Sunday morning, we're going to be returning to our series on the Beatitudes. Next Sunday night, it's kind of an odd thing. I would preach more of a series. We're going to focus on one of the minor prophets, and rather than doing a whole series, we're just going to do that one because I'm going to use you as a test audience. I've been invited to speak on a Wednesday night at a congregation over in College Station on the minor prophets. And so my minor prophet is Habakkuk. And so we're going to talk about Habakkuk next Sunday night. Part of the reason I say that's what we're going to do is because as soon as I say it, then I have to do it. And I've been putting off writing the sermon for a while, so now I can't do it. Because you'll all be coming back next week and saying, what about that sermon? So next Sunday morning, back to Beatitudes and the next Sunday night, the sermon on the book of Habakkuk. The past 15 or 16 months have been pretty weird, hasn't it? I mean, we talk about the pandemic, everything involved in the pandemic. It has been a strange time. And I wonder, you know, when we look back on it, what kind of memories will we take to it, from it? I think one of the things that I'll remember and I think about is back, you know, March when things started to really get moving in it, you know, there was a shortage of paper products. And out in Clovis, we had just got our Costco not too much longer before that. And the thing with Costco there and the paper shortage is, you know, they have a bulk of everything. And so people would stand in line to get their paper products. And I remember people would find out when the trucks were delivering. It would be a news story, and people would be outside in line waiting to get in to be able to get their paper products. Well, you know, initially I was like, come on, this is silliness. And then you go to the grocery store, you find out, oh, wait a second, there's no paper products on the shelves. And so we would get in line at Costco. I remember they weaved you through the whole store, and they didn't trust you to pick up your own paper products. They had a person there handing them to you, and you were allowed one per customer. Oh, I think, well, that's pretty strange, but how did all of that happen? Well, if it was a unique event, maybe we wouldn't really figure out how it happened, but it has happened before. Back early when I was really young, too young to remember, you guys might remember, in late 1973, there was a shortage of products. There was a shortage of paper products, and part of it was the economic climate of the country at that point in time, but there were rumors in Japan that there was a shortage of paper products. And then a member of Congress issues a press release saying that the U.S. faces a serious shortage of paper products. And then it wasn't long after that that Johnny Carson on The Tonight Show talks about there's a shortage of paper products. And so what happens? Everyone rushes out to go get paper products, and by doing that, they created a shortage, because what happened, they find out later, is there really was no shortage. People panicked, and in their panic, they created that. Now, I think it's kind of what happened a year plus ago, is there was just a panic. People heard words, and what did they do? They rushed out. People heard the news. People heard their neighbor. People saw it. People write something on Facebook and say, hey, if you need toilet paper, you better go get it today because it will be gone by 11. Words. You know, we live in a world of words. And words have great power. And to quote that great philosopher, Uncle Ben from Spider-Man, with great power comes what? Great responsibility. And there's a lot of truth to that, because words that we use, they can touch people. They affect people's minds. They affect people's hearts. They affect their feelings. And so we can use words in a positive way to express our feelings, our hopes, our dreams. I think one of the great orators of our day was Ronald Reagan. I mean, he could really write a speech and deliver it. Power of words. But at the same time, we can use words, and in the words, we can communicate negative things. We can communicate hatred. We can communicate envy. We can slander. We can do a whole bunch of negative things. And so it's important for us to talk about the power of words, especially when you look at the fact that the Bible talks a lot about it. In the book of Proverbs alone, there are some 90 statements concerning speech, our words, what we say. So in the 31 chapters, you have these 90 statements, and that definitely impresses on us. Well, God takes this seriously, especially in passages like Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21, where he says, life and death are in the power of the tongue. Life and death. Life, good. Death, negative. It's in the power of the tongue. You might ask, why, Travis, are you preaching this lesson tonight? Sometimes I'll preach lessons not because I see an issue, because like this morning's lesson and last week's, I haven't seen any conflict. And yet it was necessary in my mind to go ahead and preach that lesson. Same thing with this one. I haven't seen anything or experienced anything in my time to say, oh, this is something we need, but there was something that did prompt it. Social media is one of those things that has positive use and has negative use. And as much as I have wanted to back away from social media, there is a personal feeling that I need to be involved in it. I don't really ever communicate on it, but I'm there and just kind of get the pulse of what people are thinking and where they're at. And there was an individual I know, not a member of this congregation. He was from California, but now he lives somewhere else. He does some preaching. And he has some very strong views. And he made a statement about COVID and the pandemic. And in the statement, this is what he called COVID. He called it the COVID hoax. And as he said that, I saw people had responded. And so I clicked on their responses. And one of the people that responded, I don't know who she was, she said, how can you say that word? Because a hoax implies something that is intended to deceive. And here's the issue. We might not agree with everything concerning COVID, but the fact is it has been an issue. People have lost their life due to COVID. People have had serious physical repercussions due to COVID. So how can you say that's a hoax? And I just, if I looked at it from the perspective of, if I was someone who had lost a friend or a relative or someone I was close to, and someone says it was a hoax, that would really build up a lot of negative emotions. One word that he used, and he didn't quite understand the power, the connotation of that word, and how it would affect people. I think there's a lot of challenges when it comes to words. That we use words, sometimes we flippantly use words, and we don't really comprehend how people listen. I think it is imperative for us to remember the golden rule principle. Why we might think something in our mind, and that might be our belief, that the way we state something might have a very negative or strong effect on someone, just like something we can say might have a very positive effect. And so it is valuable for us to spend just a few moments tonight and talk about speech, to talk about the greatness of speech, and then how we can use what our words to use them in a positive way, and how to use them in a negative way. But I want you to think about how amazing speech is. This is kind of similar to what John was talking about last week with, you know, intellect and be able to think and reason and things like that, and how that's so special that it actually points to a creative power. Think about that. How did you respond, or how would you respond, when your child said his first word? Was it the father's one? They want the child to say, "Dada." And most often what happens, it says, "Mama." Words. And what do? We record that. We write it down and say, "My child said his first word. This was the very first word." Why do we do that? Because it's an amazing thing. One person said the ability to speak comes so naturally that we are apt to forget what a miracle it actually is to be able to use words. Now think about that. When God created man, when he created you, when he created me, when he created Adam and Eve, God gave them the ability to speak and the ability to understand. In Genesis chapter 2, God says to Adam, "Of every tree in the garden you shall eat, except for the tree of knowledge and good and evil." God used words to communicate with Adam what life in the garden was going to be like. And Adam understood. He heard the words and he understood the words, so much so that Adam apparently communicates those words to Eve. Because what Satan do? Satan comes along and says, "Has God told you?" And so Eve had heard the words. In chapter 2, we also see that God brings all the animals before Adam. What's Adam do with the animals? He names them, right? With words. He has ability to think and to create and to use and to apply words. When his wife is taken from the rib in his side, what's he said? "This is now bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man." What's he do? He uses words. And he describes her and her relationship to him. That wasn't from God. That was from Adam. And then in chapter 3 of Genesis, Satan comes along, and what's he do? He uses words to deceive Eve, doesn't he? He says, "In the day you eat of it, you shall not die." And then we see that Eve gives fruit to Adam, and Adam eats. Why does Adam just go ahead and say, "Yo, you're giving me fruit. I know I'm not supposed to take this fruit. I'm going to go ahead and eat it and disobey God." Isn't there the possibility, isn't it plausible to think that Eve used words to communicate to Adam to take this fruit and to eat it? And she convinced him? As negative as that experience is, but we can focus in on the concept of words and how important words are, how valuable words are, how miraculous the gift of language is. And yet, what do? So often we take words for granted. We take that wonderful gift and we waste it. We abuse it. We use it for things that aren't valuable. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 20, Solomon says, "The tongue of the righteous is choice silver." It says your words are like the best kind of silver. Also in Proverbs, most of our time tonight will be in Proverbs. In Proverbs chapter 10, verse 11, it says, "The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life." In Proverbs 15 and verse 4, those are up here. I just didn't put them up there. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 4, "A gentle tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness in it breaks the spirit." Now, I like that one in particular because of the picture it draws. A gentle tongue is a tree of life. Where does he get the picture of a tree of life? It's the Garden of Eden. That object which would sustain Adam, which would sustain
E that was taken away from them when they sin and death comes as a result. He says that's what a gentle tongue is like. It's like life. It gives life. It helps life, that gentle tongue. And so it's important for us as Christians to realize how awesome a gift we have to be able to speak. To not abuse that gift, but to make sure that every word that we speak is used in a manner that glorifies God. To not be careless with the words that we choose. Well, let's talk about some uses of the tongue. Let's get practical. You know, the thing with words, speech can be used in a positive way. Words can bring peace instead of conflict. What's Solomon say in Proverbs 15 and verse 1? A soft answer does what? Turns away wrath. It turns away anger. But a harsh word stirs it up. It's not just the words that we use, but it's also the tone of the words that we use. You can have an incredibly tense situation, and the right kinds of words can calm that situation. Proverbs 15, verse 8, the sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but the prayer of the upright is acceptable to him. The prayer with words. Words can bring peace instead of conflict. Words can restore those that have sinned. That's what we've been talking about in Matthew chapter 18, right? Go to your brother if he has sinned against you, and what? Talk to him. Communicate. Use words. And if you sin against your brother, you go to them. That's words, the importance of words. Now, what words we use, what words we choose to use in those situations, it's important to think about that. To come to an idea of what's the best way, what's the best wording that I could use to say that. We can look at, we can see that Proverbs help us to teach those that don't know. Proverbs 15 and verse 7, the lips of the wise spread knowledge, not so the hearts of the fools. Words communicate to those that don't know. I like this. A little over to the book of Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6, and listen to what God is instructing Moses to instruct the people. Deuteronomy 6, beginning in verse 1, says, now this is the commandment, the statutes, and the rules that the Lord your God commanded me to teach you, that you may do them in the land that you're going over to possess it. God commands Moses through what avenue? Through words. To take those words and to go teach it to Israel. Now, what are the words? That you may fear your God, you and your son's son, by keeping all his statutes, his commandments, which I command you, all the days of your life, that your days may be long. Hear therefore, O Israel, and be careful to do them, that it may go well with you, and that you may multiply greatly, as the Lord your God of your fathers has promised you, in a land flowing with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them. What's the them? Your words. You shall teach these words to who? To your children. You shall talk of them, these words, when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be frontless between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Write what? Words. What God says. And when the Lord your God brings you into the land, he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob, to give you a great and good cities that you did not build, and houses full of good things that you did not fill, and cisterns that you did not dig, and vineyards and olive trees that you did not plant. And when you eat and are full, then take care lest you forget the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. It is the Lord your God whom you shall fear. You shall serve by his name. You shall swear. He says you're going to go in and you're going to teach these words. What words? God's words to your children. Why? So you don't forget God. Well, we understand the concept of teaching children. It's using words. What about when we talk about spiritually things? What about teaching the next generation of the church? You have to use words, right? There are words that we use to communicate. Paul tells Timothy, what you've heard from me in the presence of many, entrust to faithful men who will be able to teach. If we don't teach, and if we don't teach the right things, we will raise a generation that doesn't know the Word of God. We need to teach the Word of God. Words can create peace instead of conflict. They can restore our soul. They can instruct those that don't know, but they can also encourage the burden. We sang about that tonight, encouraging through our words. A long time ago, when I first started preaching, I found this in a file. I think it was something that was handed down to me by my father, and it was what not to do when you go visit someone in the hospital. And while it's very specific towards that, I think there's some lessons on what not to do when you visit someone who's struggling, physical health. You know, there's some things that are just not beneficial. They discourage rather than encourage. You know, for example, to go in and to talk with someone and say, you know, I completely understand what this is like. No, you don't. What is it that you just communicated through those words? You have said that their feelings about the situation are that they're not realistic, that they're not warranted, that for some reason maybe they're blown out. No, that's not necessarily the case. Never say when you're going to visit someone, well, you know, it could be worse. Don't say that, because it could, and that might be a bad situation. You know, don't ever go to someone and say, you know, wow, you look really tired. You look like a mess. Had this woman in a congregation one time. We went to go visit her. She ended up in a nursing home, and she had a lot of health issues. She was very particular about how she presented herself. She didn't want people to come visiting her because she didn't look the way that she wanted to look. And so I went and I visited her, and she's just the whole time just so apologetic. Oh, I'm sorry about my hair. I'm sorry about that. And it's like, really? You look great. I mean, if I was in that bed in that situation, it might be a whole lot worse. You look great. Don't worry about those kinds of things. Sometimes we can say things like, you know, one day you'll look back on this as a gift. No. And one thing never to do when you go to a hospital. Say, you know, I was in this hospital at one time, and the food was horrible. The doctors were horrible. The nurses were horrible. Don't do that. Because you're talking to a captive audience. Now you're just putting the slant on everything, and they're going to want to escape, and they can't. No. Choose words wisely. Proverbs 12, verse 25. Anxiety in a man's heart weighs him down, but a good word makes him glad. You can take someone that's in a bad situation, you can make it worse by your words. Cheer them up. Cheer them up. Well, that leads us to, well, what are some negative things that I can say? What we saw in Genesis chapter 3, our words can be used to deceive or to control or to destroy. But what we can focus in on is people are hurt by lying. It's kind of been a shift as people view lying. It's been going on for a long time. I'm afraid that some of the attitudes that the world has towards lying infiltrate the church, where lying becomes a way of life, and we put different levels, degrees on lying, on falsehood, and we say this kind of lie is acceptable and that one is not. I mean, I've had debates in Bible classes with people about that. Here's the thing to think about. You know, what happens when we do lie? We're breaking a trust. Because words communicate. And so if we use words deceptively, what's that say? You can't trust me. And what happens to those relationships where you can't trust? They fall apart. Relationships are built on trust. So Proverbs 12 and verse 22, lying lips are an abomination to the Lord. Get that? Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord. He doesn't say what kind of lies. He just says lying lips. God is a God of truth. God always communicates truth, and he wants his people to always communicate truth. Lying hurts. What else hurts? Gossip. Going from one door to another, bearing tales. And the thing with gossip, and this is its own lesson or lessons, we often think of gossip as rumors. Gossips are not always rumors. Sometimes gossip is truth. It's just that someone confided in you and you're sharing it with someone else. It could be true, it could be accurate, it could be 100% right. But I don't have the role or the place to go and talk to other people about it. So gossip is just taking something and spreading it to people that don't need to hear it. Proverbs says a lot about gossip, doesn't it? How much damage it does. A worthless man plots evil, Proverbs 16, verse 27, 28, and his speech is like a scorching fire. A dishonest man spreads strife. A whisperer separates the closest friends. And so what do? You've probably heard this before. You think before you speak. Ask yourself, is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? Is it necessary? Is it kind? If it doesn't pass those tests, should I say it? People are hurt by anger. A man of wrath stirs up strife. Anger causes transgression, Proverbs 29, verse 22. I like Proverbs in Proverbs 26, 21. As charcoal to hot embers and wood to fire, so is a quarrelsome man for kindling strife. You get that picture? So vivid. As charcoal to hot embers and wood to fire, it fuels it. That's what a man who is quarrelsome does. He kindles strife. People are hurt by impulsive words. Speaking before we think. Man who's hasty, Proverbs 29, verse 20. You see a man who's hasty in his words? There's more hope for a fool than for him. Do you get that? If a man is hasty, he speaks before he thinks. A fool is better off than he is. Isn't that pretty weird to think that? And yeah, that's what he says. Why? Because more often than not, when we speak without thinking, we speak emotionally, and we don't think about wisdom. People are hurt by too much talking. There's a scene in a movie. This movie is back. It had to be in the 90s. And I remember, I'm not going to say the movie, but they're all sitting around a table. They have a visitor at the table. And at the end of the table is the father. He's the head of the house. And everyone's talking and going on and on and on. And at one point, everything quiets down. And he finally speaks up. And he says, there's just too much talking in the world. And you think about that. There's so much talking. While there is room to use words and to talk and to communicate, there's also a time to restrain. Proverbs 10 and verse 19, when words are many, transgression is not lacking. Whoever restrains his lips is prudent, is wise. Sometimes you just don't talk. Because the more we talk, the more apt we are to say things that we shouldn't, or to hear things that we shouldn't. And when something's said, it cannot be unsaid. And when something's heard, it cannot be unheard. So how do we do it right? Let me give you four ways to control this amazing gift of speech. Number one, every day dedicate your heart and your tongue to the Lord. The Lord, my mouth, I want to use it for you. Help me to use it the right way. Dedicate it every day in prayer to God. Put your heart in tune with God by reading and meditating on His Word every day. The more we read, the more we meditate, the more we'll start to talk like God wants us to talk. Number three, assume responsibility for every word you speak. Don't make excuses. If you say it, claim it. Claim responsibility. And then if you say anything that is unloving or hurtful, seek forgiveness. Say what we talked about this morning. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry that my words came out wrong. We see sorry as a sign of weakness. Sorry is not necessarily a sign of weakness. Rather, it's a sign of strength because we are willing to say, I was wrong. And it's that mentality, that mindset, that puts us more in tune with what God would have us to be. So as we go through the week, every day, commit your heart and your mouth to God. Put your heart in tune by reading His Word. Assume responsibility. If you fall short, seek forgiveness. And remember, there's always power in this amazing thing that God has given us, speech. It's truly remarkable. I talk a lot, and then there's times to be quiet, and this is that time. Thank you for listening tonight. Appreciate you all being here as we come together to worship God. As we close tonight, we want to offer this opportunity if there's someone who needs to respond to the gospel. You know, if you need to be obedient to the gospel through baptism, or there's something in your life that needs to be changed, or if you need prayers, whatever your need is, we stand willing to help you. Why not come forward while we stand and sing this song?
There's a fountain.